From the land to Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of May 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. We'll hear from Nick Sider, Extension entomologist. We'll talk with Ed Usset, agricultural economist from the University of Minnesota, and check out the weather forecast, too, with Mark Russo on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day, 485 and three quarters, a settlement up 5.5 cents. December, 504 and a half, 5 3/4 higher. July beans at 1222 and three quarters, 19.5 cents higher. November at $11.96 and three quarters, up 14 for the day. Soft red winter wheat in the July harvest month, up 3.25 at 641. The hard red July, unchanged at $6.94.5. Live cattle futures were down $1.25. Feeders off $5.57.5. And lean hogs, $1.52.5 lower. Crude oil in the Brent, that's the world price, at $114.30 a barrel, up around $6. And the West Texas at $106, up $4 for the afternoon. Kurt Kimmel is here now. He is with agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us. Let's get right into it. What got behind the beans today that pushed them higher?
Giddy up. Year of the horse, fire horse, 60-year cycle. So it continues to follow suit. But basically, world events. Over the weekend, the risk premiums back in on crude oil futures trading up over $4 a barrel here as we speak here Monday afternoon. But full throttle down, pedal to metal, commodity funds bought over 14,000 contracts of corn, almost 17,000 contracts of beans, 4,600 wheat, 3,400 meal, and 7,100 bean oil just going into midday. We've kind of defied the law of gravity here and put some risk premium back into the marketplace. There was some talk that hedge funds are concerned about, I don't know how they know what the hedge funds are doing, but anyway, there was mention of hedge funds watching or concerned as we move into this fall with South America, their fertilizer capability and fuel capability on that crop. And that's kind of why beans kind of moved higher, and bean oil continues to be, moving higher also. So that news coupled with the Chinese-U.S. meeting here at the middle of the month, May 14th, 15th, that is, they're in buying a little ahead of that meeting. So we'll see if there's some confirmation take place there. The monthly crush, over 227 million bushels of beans. That's a little less than expected, but it was above last year, 189, 214 in February. So the crush and the crushing margins remain strong. Ethanol usage, ethanol demand remains strong. So we're hitting on all cylinders. And even though export sales aren't huge, we are shipping out what we sold this morning's export inspections report showed that we shipped out over 2 million metric tons of corn. Bean shipments were a little light at 450,000 tons, and the wheat shipments were kind of in the middle there, about 434,000 tons. So just continuing to see some strong enthusiasm for the most part. A producer feels like they kind of got our hands in the pocket here as they continue to focus on trying to get the crop in the ground, which is seems to be going fairly well for most part of the U.S.
Interesting enough, because most would have said, hey, next time it shows me $5 December corn, $12 November beans, maybe I ought to make a sale, but they're busy and they may be thinking about it, but they're probably thinking the market still has room to run higher. What are you telling them?
Yeah, I know. I think you got to scale into it. We're still sticking with the original plan, price floors, raise your price floor, try to improve the price we solved in February, the spring price guarantee, and try to continue to build on that. The market is fitting the seasonal up in the first part of May here, but however, as we move into May, the crop gets in the ground and And if we see a change in attitude on some of this world news, the risk becomes back to the downside. So it's a win-win situation by trying to raise the floor here. $5, you go back 2 months, Kurt, if we get to $5, let me know. I want to sell beans. They cracked $12, $12.50. I said, I want to sell some $12 beans, but man, I'm busy right now and we'll take a look at it later. So I think psychology wise, sold a little bit too much too soon there last fall. And it's kind of hard to pull the trigger for most guys. And so you got to kind of stick to the plan here and reward the market and raise your price floors in here, because as the volatility picks up, it's nice to see it move up, but there's going to be a day we come in here and we'll be the opposite here and be down. So it's a dynamic marketplace, much better prices than what most traders or analysts was looking at here 2 months ago.
Very quickly, a very short answer. Do you think this afternoon's crop progress will show continued push at a record pace to get crops in the ground? Have they slowed down?
They might slow down a little bit here in the east, but the east was well ahead. But we did see some headway here just over the weekend in eastern Iowa. Of course, it's big time progress there in western. So I think we're still at the average, a little bit above the average pace. It's amazing how much ground you guys can cover.
Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it, Kurt.
You bet. Take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. We're now joined by Nick Sider. He is a field crops entomologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and along with his colleagues has been surveying farmers across the Midwest related to resistance to insecticides developing in alfalfa weevil populations. Thanks for being with us today. I'd like to know, Nick, if the alfalfa weevil is just that troublesome of a pest, and maybe some of the recent history about its development of insecticide resistance. Can you give us an update?
Yeah, we've had a number of reports of field failures with pyrethroids for alfalfa weevil in recent years. And, you know, unlike some of our larger acreage crops, we don't have a ton of different insecticide options in alfalfa. So if we lose efficacy with the pyrethroid materials like lambda-cyhalothrin that we use the most frequently, that could actually be a pretty big problem.
Are there any current research efforts going on with this pest?
So we've been collecting weevil populations and assessing them for resistance this season, really throughout the Midwest. It's an effort headed up by my colleague, Pinchu Lay at University of Nebraska. In addition, my colleague, Anthony Hansen at University of Minnesota, is coordinating a short survey of Midwestern alfalfa farmers. And the idea here is to put some hard numbers to the reports we've been hearing. You know, how often are farmers spraying for weevils and other insects? How often are they struggling to get good control with those applications? And what other methods are they relying on to manage insects in their alfalfa forage? Those are the kinds of answers that we're looking for with this effort.
Is there still time for farmers to participate in the survey, and how might they do that?
Oh, absolutely. So they can reach out directly to me if they have weevil populations they would like to see tested, or if they want to participate in the survey. My email is nseiter@illinois.edu. For the survey, they can also access that directly at z.umn.edu/alfalfa-pest-survey. Or, you know, if you just Google alfalfa pest survey, turns out two or three articles are going to pop up that have that link. So you don't necessarily have to memorize that. The survey is going to close around the end of May, so there's no time like the present to take it. If you get a few minutes, jump on there. I think it's 22 questions, none of which take very long to answer. Should be able to get through it pretty quick and hopefully give us some valuable information about what's going on your farms.
Nick Sider is an extension field crops entomologist at the University of Illinois. If you're a farmer and would like to fill out the alfalfa weevil survey, it's easily enough done. Just search the internet for the words alfalfa weevil survey. A series of articles should pop up, and you can follow the link to the survey and the questionnaire inside those articles. Speaking of Nick Sider, if you happen to be subscribed to the Crop Central newsletter from the University of Illinois Department of Crop Sciences, this morning you received an email from him, actually from the Crop Central website, but he's written an article for it and a link there to the applied research that they've been doing over the last year. It's the annual summary. It is really good and worth downloading the PDF file. That link is in the short article that Nick has written. That article also is on our website at willag.org, willag.org. It is at the top of the page, at least it was earlier today. It may not be by the time you take a look at it, but check it out and download the PDF file so you can catch up on all the kinds of work that the crop scientists have done over the last year. Applied research, that's things that are happening in your field. And you can do that right now at willag.org or by subscribing to the Crop Central newsletter, which is on the FarmDoc website. Look under sections and you'll find field crops, and there you'll find the Crop Central subscription, so you can be emailed every time that the crop scientists have something of note for you, including Nick Sider's piece, which is already on the website today. Now, let's turn our attention to another extension service out of Minnesota. We're joined by Ed Ussett, agricultural economist there. Hi, Ed. Thanks for being with us. I hope you're doing well. I'd like to start, though, with how things are doing across the state as it's related to crop progress in Minnesota.
We're doing well. We're getting the Minnesota crop is getting in the ground in a timely fashion. We could use a little more heat to get things going, but we have had in the last 10 days some timely rains, particularly in the Southwest, and it was needed.
Now, we've had a little rally in the corn market particularly. What do you think of those markets?
Well, I think it's now's the time, Todd. Now's the time. For the last 2, 3, 4 times we met, I've told you that my eye was on, for new crop sales, the December contract at $5 or better. And we came close, but not quite there, not quite there. Well, guess what? We're there. I believe we're trading 502, 503 a bushel on December 26 corn. Soybeans have been in a good level, and they're very strong today, and I haven't a clue why, but we're $12 on new crop soybeans, and even the wheat market. Even the wheat market is doing well. It's reminding me, Todd, of an article I wrote almost 10 years ago for Corn and Soybean Digest. The wheat market was on a big rally, and I wrote an article that said wheat can be the leader. It can lead us out of the doldrums. And it hit the press and hit the street at just the time when the wheat market was falling apart. So I'm not predicting that. I don't want that to happen. It's just one of the risks we take when we make brave calls. But I'm interested in new crop sales across the board. Disappointed by basis levels. I wish they were a little bit better. They're not awful on new crop. Old crop, it's not very perky. And of course, that when basis levels are not strong, that always makes me cast a wary eye on what's wrong here. I think strong markets should be led by basis and not lagging like that. But time to get something done.
What are basis levels like in the state of Minnesota?
Well, I am looking at, for example, corn, southwestern Minnesota, not at ethanol plants, just elevators, shuttle loading facilities, 65 under the July. And, you know, I would expect a year or two ago, we'd have been 30 cents better than that. Soybeans, I believe we're at 70 under, 75 under the July. Again, I like to think we could be 30 cents better, but we're not.
Prices here are not that low. And actually, that would be typical, or would have been typical 15 years ago, But with the buildup out of the ethanol plants, mm-hmm. the rail lines going to the west, not quite into the in the eastern part of Minnesota, but out in that southwestern part of Minnesota, probably picked up to the rail lines going out to export markets there too.
Yep.
I just wonder why the basis difference is taking place. Did they store and keep more in that area than here?
They must have more. And, you know, I can only speak as a former buyer. They don't need it that bad. Or if they do need it, it's coming easily. Maybe driven by the board, higher board prices, moving some grain.
Yeah.
It could be that simple.
Yeah.
It could be that simple.
So the little rain causes farmers to take some time, turn around, look at the marketplace, and make a phone call, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which means they're doing exactly what you said they ought to do.
Yeah, get something done right now. I'm also reminded, you know, there are different types of orders you can place in the market, a market order, a limit order, and so on. And I think of this long wait for higher prices. And I'm telling you a pit story now. Back in the pit, they had orders that brokers would, the WAGs would call CIC orders. That's a cancel if close order.
Yes.
That is, you're waiting for $5 December corn for months and months and months. And when you finally get close to it, you call your broker and say, oh, no, I don't want to sell now. I mean, this thing's strong. It's going to keep going. Don't cancel if close. Keep it in there.
The Strait of Hormuz. Does it matter very much, do you think, at this point as it's related to the price of grains going forward? For instance, it appears we'll be at a standstill of some sort for some time. I suppose the difference could be whether we can actually move traffic through the strait,
mm-hmm.
and it's not clear that's the case yet, or if the United States and Iran actually go back to military action.
Well, that one's going to hang over this market for a while. That whole issue, I'm not smart enough to understand the ongoing effects there, except to say that, you know, it's having an impact, obviously, on energy prices, on fertilizer prices, availability in some cases. And these are going to be ongoing issues, but apparently we're not overly worried about it because here in the U.S. we're getting things done.
Indeed. Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Ed Usett is an agricultural economist. He is with the University of Minnesota. Let's take a look at what's been happening in the global growing regions. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Mark, we have a lot of ground to cover in the Northern Hemisphere as it's spring in this part of the world. Let's begin in the southern plains of the United States, the hard red winter wheat growing regions, even a little bit of the Corn Belt in Kansas and Nebraska. Can you tell me about conditions on the ground?
Yeah, well, one of the items here in the plains is that over the weekend, and similar to here in the Corn Belt, temperatures were really cold, especially on Saturday. We don't think that the wheat crop was advanced enough for there to be any kind of significant winter kill from the cold. But with some areas dropping in the 20s, you can't rule out a field or two that could have experienced some issues. But going forward, there's no threatening cold expected here from this point on, with temperatures kind of seasonal here for the next 5 days, but then climbing up to warmer than normal levels after that. As for the precip outlook across the plains, winter wheat belt, and thinking also for corn planting in the southwest Midwest or in like eastern Kansas and that, still no sign of any, you know, meaningful rainfall or widespread meaningful rainfall to be significant here and turn around or improve the situation. There will be some rain activity. It's not going to be a bone dry pattern, but with the activity that does develop here, that'll likely keep conditions stable versus, well, further deteriorating or improving significantly.
Are there issues that we need to deal with in the Dakotas, north and south, in the western parts of those two states, maybe Montana, Wyoming, or into the Canadian prairies?
Well, things are improving here with their planting conditions over the next couple of weeks. A reason being is that, you know, compared to lately, things have been unseasonably cold and also quite wet. Again, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, we saw a big snow across the Canadian prairies and parts of the Northern Plains. That has since melted, but temperatures have remained cold. And looking ahead here, that generally drier and warmer pattern will continue to evolve over the next, well, not only the next 7 days here for this week, but also looking out into next week as well, both in the Northern Plains, but then also across the Canadian prairie. So with this combination of warmer temps and generally drier conditions, that will allow a gradual improvement in fieldwork operations and planting for spring wheat, canola, and other small grains.
Now pick up with the Dakotas on the eastern side, move through Minnesota, Iowa, and on to Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. What do you see?
Yeah, generally drier weather here across most of the Corn Belt here, both south and north, east and west. Temperatures for this week, unseasonably cool after today and into tomorrow, which is still, which is on the warmer side across the Corn Belt. But the rest of this week does look to be unseasonably cool. That does look to improve next week. So that will allow soil temperatures to begin increasing again. And overall, we see planting weather for the Corn Belt just, you know, kind of keeping at a generally steady pace here and not running into, not seeing any kind of pattern that would result in any, you know, major or significant planting delays or interruptions.
What are you watching in parts of Europe from west to east?
Yeah, we're watching general contraction of dryness across Europe over the next couple of weeks. This has already started across Western Europe and countries like France and England, which have been drier than normal over the past 4 to 6 weeks. And that's starting to raise some concern for winter crop development and newly planted summer crops. But with this pattern change across Europe and a turn to more active conditions, that is increasing rainfall and helping to improve topsoil moisture. And we even see this active pattern extending further to the east and impacting countries like Poland and the Baltic countries, which are also countries that have been unseasonably dry here this spring. And so they need improvement in topsoil moisture to boost planting rates and to reduce any kind of dryness concerns there. So all in all, an improving situation here for both winter crop development and summer crop planting as we move through this early to middle portion of May across Europe.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.